This episode of the Out of Bounds podcast is brought to you by Fisher's Keys. Hello. Hey. Hi. How are you? This is episode number 102 of the Out of Bounds podcast. I'm Adam Jabber. This episode is with Amy David. Amy Jane David on Instagram is a skier, backpacking guide, producer, mountain athlete. She does it all. She's awesome. This is another Zoom episode, or not Zoom episode, Google Hangouts episode in this particular case. And it was great. It turned out awesome. I mean, Amy's rad. I like wanted to do this one in person, but it is what it is in the current state of affairs. Hopefully we'll get back to doing in-person episodes soon, because like that's what I like doing more than anything, I think. It's also easier for me. It's easier for me to focus. It's easier for me to like get like questions out and like have a conversation with someone in real life, I think. But who knows? We'll see what happens. We'll go from there. We got at least four more of these coming up for you guys to listen to. I hope you guys have been enjoying them still. They're great. And these people that are on the show, like for the next four, are all A-plus guests, like every one of them. This episode was going to be Meme the Whites, but I changed my mind, mostly because there's a little issue that we had with making the voice sound like not who this person is. So, I mean, it is what it is. In the next couple episodes, we'll get that one out to you. But for now, this episode is one I was going to wait to drop because it was it's awesome. Like, it's really, really rad. So, yeah, I guess we'll just jump into the episode pretty much. Quick sponsor shout out to our title sponsor, who's Fisher Skis. Fisher Skis is a ski company, in case you were wondering. They make everything from like racing skis, which is what I feel like they're probably most well known for, but they also make some of my favorite skis, which are like the do everything skis, like the one ski to do literally whatever you want. And in this particular case, I'm talking about the Ranger 102 FR. The whole Ranger free line is phenomenal. It's like, it's what I use. It's my go-to stuff. It's fun if you want to just be able to do everything, like rip groomers, go touring on it, hit the park a little bit, just have fun, like just be playful. Like, this is the right setup for you. So in the fall, when we get to some simpler times, hopefully, if you're looking for some new sticks, or you're looking for some new sticks now, you can shop your local retailer, or go to fishersports.com. Fishersports.com. Sorry, it's been a minute since I've done these reads. But yeah, I mean, check it out. The stuff is awesome. They have everything from like I said, full on race skis to like bomber all mountain skis. I also, another one I really, really like is the Hannibal line. That's been, I mean, I've talked about that a ton because that's like my go-to touring ski. Super light, but it also skis well. There's so many skis out there that ski like garbage, that are great uphill skis. This is not the case here. This is like the best one, in my humble opinion, to do a mix of everything. I mean, I just love how nimble it is. It's light. It's stiff enough. It does everything. So definitely check those out. I've posted a bunch of stuff on our Instagram page about these, both of those skis, over the past, whoever knows how long, it's been rad. I mean, it's been really, really good. So check that stuff out. Let me know what you think. If you guys have gear questions, obviously hit me up in the meantime. We are switching over to bike stuff pretty soon, bike content on the old gram. So check us out. Follow us on social media. Follow us on the YouTube. Follow us on whatever it is that you like to use best. And you can shoot me an email if you want to hear, like, if you have a guest suggestion, if you have a suggestion for anything, really. Hit me up. Just adam@outofpodcast.com. And yeah, I'll do my best to respond. Leave us a review on iTunes if you can. That stuff always helps a ton. I think we're at 160-something reviews right now, and that is awesome. Like, that's great. I'd love to keep growing that as much as possible, so that's really, like, on iTunes, that's, like, what helps people find the show. Also, sharing the show on Instagram helps, but, like, for sure, iTunes as well. So, If you guys could do that, that would be rad. And I'm going to stop talking now. And Amy David is on in 3, 2, 1. See ya.
I am awesome.
All right, Amy, who are you? What do you do? Tell the people a little bit about yourself.
My name's Amy David, and I am a lover of the outdoors. I am a professional skier and mountain guide, and I also have a company that produces outdoor-themed media content.
Okay. What does that mean? I guess we'll start there. What is outdoor-themed media content?
Yeah.
Because that sounds very professional, and I'm sure people are going to be like, what? Like,
yeah, it's a very vague term. So I started my own company when I graduated college about 5 years ago. It's called Action Inspired Productions. And I had some forethought because I knew that I wanted to continue guiding and putting on retreats in the outdoors. And so it's paired productions with adventures. And so through my work as being an outdoor sports athlete and with my background in media production, I'm able to work with a variety of companies to basically generate interesting content for them, from photos to video to writing. When I was in college, I studied psychology and communication with a minor in outdoor education and leadership.
Nice.
So quite the interesting combo there. Yeah. But it's kind of funny to look back and you always hear people like, oh, you never use your college degree. And I've managed to use it in everyday life, really, because psychology, communication, and the outdoors are anything related to humans and what I do. But to get more direct in answering your question for the outdoor themed media, when I go on these different adventures and trips, I'm able to collect photos. If that's working for Icelandic Skis, where I'm the actual skier in the photo, then we get that marketing content they can then use for their next year of marketing for those skis as they're trying to sell those and tell stories. That's just one example. Or if I'm on the production side of things, a good example was for Ski Utah. When I was living in Salt Lake, I did a video series for them for 4 years. We did 17 episodes and I completely produced it myself. Awesome. Yeah, it was really cool. It was called The Wild Women of the Wasatch, and people could still go and look at them. I've been improving production quality and luckily got to work with a filmer and editor, Crocheting Media. If anyone checks him out, he's an awesome guy. And he got to go with me, and we would meet up with these different women who crush it in the mountains. And I've found that it's often people that don't necessarily have their stories told or are always in the spotlight that really do have these inspiring stories. And so my goal was to find those women and create a storyline and share their message with people that were following along with Ski Utah. So the first one was the women that are involved with adaptive sports at the Wasatch adaptive sports program at Snowbird. And then we've done everything from gnarly nurses to mountain mamas. Just trying to spread the word of other women that are getting after it in the outdoors. I've tried awesome. To balance promoting other people with also, you know, my dreams of being a professional skier. You have to be able to promote yourself as well. But I always think a balance is key.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like that's a good mix of things. And that's, I mean, you make a good point. Like it does seem like a lot of the people that are the most interesting don't necessarily have their stories told all the time. And they're not mm-hmm. talking about it all the time. Like they're just kind of out there doing their own thing. So I think that's like highlighting those people is really interesting.
Yeah. And I think that we're definitely really attracted to the high action of the visuals. And people that are really famous skiers are really good at their sport. And they also likely have very interesting stories as well.
Yeah.
My interest in psychology really spurred looking at the deeper meaning in what motivates people and why they love pursuing that sport. Let's move my more sensitive side.
Yeah.
But it seems like, I mean, all humans have those emotions and we thrive on stories and then we're captivated by the interesting action of it, but trying to build it all together is one of my main missions.
Yeah. Yeah. So why did you move away from Utah? Like what's why the, yeah, why like you're in Sun Valley now, is that right?
Yeah. So I'm living in Sun Valley, Idaho right now.
Yeah.
And I get to work in the Sawtooth Mountains most of the summer. And then for skiing, I spend a lot of time here because I love it. And then I also am able to travel around the world or around the adjacent states to ski. But the main reason I moved from Salt Lake City, where I went to college and then stayed a few years after, was that I'm a small town girl.
Yeah.
I grew up in Pinedale, Wyoming. That's a like sleepy little cowboy mountain town, the base of the Wind River Mountains. And I went to Salt Lake, which is definitely more, well, it's 100% big city, but close to the mountain still.
Yeah.
And I found that I'm so much more happy when I'm immersed in the mountains versus having to commute to them, where I just live in them right now. Huh. I did chase a boy here, so tell the whole truth of the story.
It's a mix of things.
It's a combination, but definitely my love of the Sawtooth Mountains drew me here, among various life situations that had played out leading up to me moving here.
Yeah,
it was definitely replenishing and refreshing to the soul to be in this place.
Yeah, that's really funny that like you wanted to get close. Like to me, Salt Lake is so close to the mountains. Like it is a city, but it's like it's right there. You know, like the closest hill to me is like an hour and a half. You know, like the closest real hill basically is an hour and a half, and it's still small. Like so, it's like it's crazy to me that like you're going from like what a half an hour commute to being right there. And that half an hour wasn't enough.
I know. I love Salt Lake. Yeah. When I was choosing a college to go to, like the colleges that I applied for when I was back in high school, I only applied to schools that I could ski really close. So like Denver was too far away for me. Salt Lake was prime. Like the mountains are incredible. The snow is perfect. I still make multiple commutes every year to go and ski and mountain bike in Salt Lake.
Sick. So how'd you get into guiding and how'd you get into skiing in general? I guess people probably like to hear that part of it too.
Yes. Skiing definitely is like my deepest, truest love. And I started skiing when I learned to walk. Growing up in Pinedale, my parents were skiers. They were like my dad's family homesteaded in the Wyoming range, just outside of Pinedale, and guided trips in the mountains. So mountain life was always part of who I was, growing up and who my family is. On my mom's side, they were all racers. One of my uncles works for the U.S. ski team. He's the course director for the World Cup downhill races. So I have like the racing background and then just the deep mountain love. And yeah, so they taught me how to ski when I was just a little tiny kid. They would tow us up the hill behind our house on Nordic skis and then go between the lines downhill. And I always say that I loved going with my dad because he would turn less and we'd go faster. And then I grew up ski racing on the team in high school. We would drive up after school in the bus and the lifts would be closed at our tiny little resort. So we would have to like hike up the mountain and then train the little brushy gates. Had a little rebellious side and did some freestyle competitions for the last few years. I would go to Park City and train at the Olympic Park. That's where I learned how to do backflips when I was in eighth grade. The first backflip I did, I landed like straight on my face.
Yeah.
But then hiked up and did it again and landed. So it all comes around. Like I still crash.
Yeah.
Just like everyone.
So. Yeah, for sure.
Trying to stay on track, skiing. I've always had this dream of being a professional skier.
Yeah.
Like when I thought of, I was asked at a younger age what I wanted to be when I grew up. And it was always, I want to be a doctor. I want to be an actress, like these more prestigious sounding jobs.
Yeah.
But then this guy asked me, he's like, okay, like if I could tap a wand and you could be anyone that you wanted to be, or if every job in the world paid the exact same, how do you want to spend your time? Like, what do you want to contribute to the world? And of course, I want to spend my time skiing. And then I always have this part of me that wants to give back. And so that's where the combo of the skiing and the guiding come in, where I want to ski. So I've pursued that and I'm still working on and in the middle of like an individual professional skiing career.
Yeah.
Where I could continue on that. I'll continue on that story.
Yeah,
but
go wherever you want. Don't feel like we don't have to stay in any, like, I'm terrible at staying on track as it is. So, like, don't feel like this has to go anywhere in particular. I don't have any questions written down or anything. So,
okay. It's perfect. and then, yeah, so I'll continue on the skiing track, but then as this is happening, I go to college and I'm majoring in psychology communication. Then they start offering this outdoor education and leadership minor. So of course I changed all of my courses so I could get that minor. And that's where I started learning how to backpack and how to, there's outdoor leadership, experiential education, all of these outdoor based courses. And I started guiding trips for the college in my last few years there, and then just continued guiding backpacking trips until now. And I was able to create this women's retreat program that takes or invites ladies from all over the country, or really all over the world, to come out, and we go backpacking for 5 days at a time. And the goal is to teach them all of these skills to be self-sufficient so they could do it themselves. So empowering them that they're just as capable. They just, you know, maybe need someone to show them how to do it or to go with them the first time. And then it also builds community. So bringing like-minded women together to experience this beautiful place and experience together. I just think it's the soul adventure that brings people together. So we've got people from the age of 20 to 60 that are all on the same trips. And yeah, that's been my baby for the last 4 summers. I started with 1 trip in Wyoming, and then we expanded quickly to Wyoming, Idaho, Utah, and then multiple trips at each location. And now I've been working with And She's Dope too to build this. And so we've been able to start including mountain biking and bringing on other trip leaders as well and training guides. And so it's been this really cool growth of, I think that's where the meaningful side for me came in, is where I'm hopefully empowering other people to be able to go and enjoy nature and feel like they're confident and competent, and eliminating the compete and comparison dynamics that often happen in those kind of group situations.
Yeah. I think it's super intimidating for people to get into like these kind of sports. I imagine, especially for women, but it's hard for anyone to get involved in like mountain biking and skiing. I feel like are these like, they almost feel like cool kid club sports, like in a certain way. Like you feel like from the outside, you don't really know what to do. You don't know the right areas. You don't know how to meet people. You don't even know how to go about it. So if you're like attracted to these ideas and these sports, it that is sometimes the hurdle that, you know, scares people away.
Oh, totally. And it's a huge financial barrier too. Totally. We are lucky enough to work with a few companies that have sponsored the trips and provide a fleet of 10 to 12 items of gear. So we have like Big Agnes has provided tents, sleeping bags and pads for everybody. Osprey has provided backpacking packs that are women specific, and Sawyer provides water filters, and it goes on. But these companies are so helpful because, you know, if us as a small business had to buy that fleet of gear, that's a huge overhead cost. And then for these women that are starting out on their first time backpacking, they'd have to buy all that gear as well. And so having that just available for them to use on the trip is huge, because, I mean, who wants to spend over $1,000 in gear and then realize like, oh, I actually hate backpacking. No, yeah. It's definitely not for everyone. And like mountain biking is not for everyone.
No. No,
but yeah, that financial barrier is kind of tricky.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's always a hurdle for sure.
Yeah. I'm a beginner. Well, I was a beginner mountain biker my last year in Salt Lake. So was that 4 years ago? Yeah. I started mountain biking, and I just assumed that I thought I could mountain bike the way that I could ski, but I've been skiing my whole life.
Yeah.
So like, it's not really comparable. And man, I crashed so many times. Like trying to go like all out on the downhills and just over the handlebar, and finally learned, you know, like, it's okay. Like, you don't have to be extreme at everything. Like, just enjoy it for what it is and enjoy being a beginner again. Yeah. And that whole learning curve.
That's what I was going to ask you actually, is like, you don't feel like the skills translate at all.
They do to a certain degree.
Yeah.
But it takes time to have that, like, the translation process takes time.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's definitely different. Like, it's very,
Because you've been mountain biking a bit recently, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, I've been riding for a long time, and, like, that's, I'm definitely a more confident, I think, mountain biker than I am a skier. I don't know. It's mixed. But either way, like, it's, they both are so different, but I feel like, I don't know, there's a lot of feelings in both of them that are so similar, right? Like, when you're in the woods and you're just, like, cruising through stuff, like, it, that like, rush of excitement you get when there's a super fun thing that you just did, like, that's the same. But I feel like there's a lot more focus on what you're on with a bike than it is, you know, with skis. With skis, I feel like, you know, skis are skis to a certain extent. Obviously, like, some skis are better than other skis, like, we know this, but the mountain bike thing is, like, the wrong bike, like, the wrong size bike, the wrong bike, like, too much travel, the wrong, yeah, it has more, mm-hmm. the gear has more impact, I feel like.
Oh, 100%. Like, I started out trying to follow some really experienced mountain bikers up in Idaho. There's a lot of these cross-country trails, so miles of uphill followed by great downhill. But I was on a too small of bike that was old, like, didn't have enough gears even. And I was like, that was misery. It was hard.
It's totally hard. It's hard to learn. It's like,
But once I got on a bike, it was way better. And once I got some tips on how to mechanically position my body, like, my friend Christine is an incredible mountain biker, and she would ride behind me and yell at me. She's like, no, like, butt down, like, butt down and back. Because on the downhills, if you're a beginner, it's pretty natural to get nervous and be like up over your handlebars, like, weight forward, too much on the brakes. And I had to think, okay, butt back and down and let it roll. Like, let the bike do its job.
Do you consider yourself like a quick learner? Like, are you a good learner? Like, I don't consider myself a good learner at all. Like, every, like, whenever somebody tries to tell me something, I'm like, no, I fucking got it. I'm going to figure it out. Like, I'll just, like, I'll figure, I'm a terrible learner. Like, I'm not, or at least I'm not good at being taught, I guess. How are you at those?
Maybe you're less coachable.
Exactly.
So I'm a very driven person and very motivated. And so if I want to get better at something, I'll find a way to make it happen. If that's me sucking it up and letting someone coach me, or if it's me just, you know, if I want to get in better fitness, I will go out and train as hard as possible to make it happen. I mean, I like to say that as I've sat in the side all today. But yeah, so having that internal drive is key. Improving quickly. I really could relate it to snowmobiling. So I started snowmobiling 3 seasons ago. Well, I've ridden a snowmobile as a kid, of course. Well, not of course, not everybody's done that, but I really started riding off trail, like mountain riding, in the last 3 years. And it was a hard learning curve, and it took a lot of my own personal drive to make it happen. Where the first few times I went out, I was terrible. Like, my sled would just roll as soon as I slightly got off the flat ground. It was hard. Have you snowmobiled at all?
Zero. I've got snowmobile experience.
Okay. Maybe if anyone that's listening has tried to learn to ride their sled offhill, can empathize with the amount of challenge and difficulty that it is to figure it out. Like, it's a 400-pound machine.
Yeah.
I only weigh 130 pounds. And it's not intuitive. Like, if you want to turn to the right in the deep snow, you want to turn right, you turn the handlebars to the left, and then you shift your weight to the right.
Yeah.
And then you squeeze the throttle. So essentially, once you get even better, you're pointing your skis exactly where you don't want to go. So if there's a big tree, you don't want to hit it. You point your skis at it, and you squeeze the throttle. Like, it's not mentally intuitive until you've done it a lot. Yeah. And so it's hard. And I've always joked that, like, the full face helmet is so that you can cry and nobody will know. And then you pick it up and then you do it. I told one of my guy friends that, and he's like, he didn't think it was as funny.
Yeah.
He was in the beginner stages, and he's like, that's not very nice.
Oh, I feel like I'd be super upset. Like, if I was, like, in the middle of being frustrated by it, I don't think I would think it's funny at all. Like, now I think it's funny, but in the moment, maybe not.
Yeah, you'd be like, just go as far away from me as possible.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm gonna figure it out. Give me a minute.
Yeah. No, it's hard, but I guess to answer your original question of being a quick learner is, I did like snowmobiling. I learned really quickly because I really, really wanted it, and I sought out the coaching from people who are really good at riding, and I asked them to help me, and then I listened. And as frustrating as it was to not immediately be good at it, I just had to keep trying and keep trying and suck it up. When I wanted to cry in my helmet, and maybe did a few times, but then I got back on and kept trying. And now I can go almost anywhere that the other guys that are some of the best go. And it does feel really good to have that sense of accomplishment.
Yeah, that's sick. It's good to know, like, because it's a very overlooked skill, I think, by a lot of people that a lot of athletes have, just like being able to like take criticism, learn, and like figure things out, and like do whatever, like you said, do whatever you can to get better at things. Like that's a skill set that I think gets overlooked a lot.
Right. And embrace being at that in the different stages of learning.
For sure. Yeah. The beginner stage is always, I think, the roughest for people to get through.
Yeah. I try and I think it's good to learn new things.
Yeah.
And as in my position as a guide, from backpacking, it's simple. I mean, you're just walking through the woods, but there's a lot that goes into it. But teaching people how to backpack, and then if I'm in a skiing position, teaching them how to ski, where I'm seen as the expert, I think it's good for me to also in my personal life be a beginner at things so that I can be more relatable and so I can empathize with where that person is at. You know, instead of just telling them like, well, you know, you should do this, this, and this. Like, I get it. Like when I was a beginner, this is how I felt too.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. How's the teaching side of it go for you? Like the watching other people go through the motions of like getting better in the backcountry, feeling discomfort, like you're with people when they're at those moments. Mm-hmm. How is that for you? Like, how do you handle those times?
It's actually really rewarding. And can be challenging. The skiing part, I'm just now becoming a backcountry skiing guide, where I've been going through the American Mountain Guide Association training courses, in which it was actually canceled halfway through the course during our good old coronavirus situation.
Yeah.
But I think I'll be better answering the question with summer-based stuff.
Yeah.
We're in the backcountry. For summer, when I'm backpacking, the biggest thing that I see people overcoming is that internal discussion that they're having with themselves.
Yeah.
And it's really cool to watch where people will start out on, especially the Sawtooth trip. That trip starts out on a steep uphill. And a lot of times it's women that have never backpacked before. Backpacking, you're carrying like a 30 to 40 pound pack for multiple miles, increasing elevation. Like it's hard. You're going to get, if you haven't done it before, you're going to get rubbing bruises, sores on your shoulders, your hips. And you're going to have this mental discussion with yourself. Like, am I good enough? Am I strong enough? Like, wow, this is really hard. Or you might be like, you know, coaching yourself. Everyone has a different internal dialogue with when they're struggling. And when I'm able to see people overcome that, where I know they were having a really hard time on the first day, and then on the last day, they're openly verbalizing how proud of themselves that they are. It's like, it's so cool to be able to facilitate that experience for people. One example was this woman that came out on our trip last summer to the Sawtooths, and she told us, because we have these facilitated like, conversations every night, call them, they used to be fireside chats, but now we call them hot toddy talks because sometimes people can't have fires, but you can always have whiskey if you want it. so we try and have this judgment-free zone where people can talk about their experience. And this particular woman told us how on that first day, as she was having a hard time on the few switchbacks right off the bat, she looked up and saw the group far ahead of her and looked back and saw the lake that was getting smaller and smaller and thinking, geez, I should just ditch all of this crap, this huge backpack, and just book it back to the lake go home, enjoy, like,
yeah,
sitting on the side of the lake and just go home back to my family. And my coworker, Laura, who is just the most incredible person ever, she was the tail guide for this trip. So she was standing in the back, and that lady turned around and saw her, and she's explaining her internal dialogue of how she was trying to escape. She could do the trip. And Laura just starts hyping her up and just grabs a hold of her and gives her this huge hug and like wouldn't let her until she turned around and started walking again. She's like, don't worry, like I'm here with you. Like I'm here to be with you through this whole thing. So with that particular lady, Laura and I would switch off each day, and we would go like every few minutes and then stop and rest and chit chat and continue on. And eventually we got to this upper lake where we were going to camp for several nights, and there's this big waterfall and cliffs that you can jump off. And when we got up there, I told her, I was like, I'm gonna go jump off this cliff because I'm so hot. Like, if you want to come over, feel free to. Otherwise, just chill and enjoy like where you're at. And all of a sudden, she shows up. She's like, I've never jumped off a cliff before. What do I do? And I did not expect it at all. So we stood there on the cliff, jumping into this ice cold alpine lake. And we all jumped off at the same time, and we come up out of the water, and she's like, F yeah, like, oh yeah. She was so stoked. And then continued to tell us, she's like, my whole life, everyone tells me, no, you don't do that. Like, you're not an outdoorsy person. You don't do thrilling things. And always were asking her why she's going on this trip. And so when she left, she's like, I'm never gonna let anyone tell me what I can or can't do ever again. Like, I'm going to remember this for the rest of my life. And that's what that just like gives me the best feelings inside.
Yeah, I can tell. Yeah. Even you just telling the story, like that's awesome. Like those are the kind of moments that I think people look forward to, like they don't know that they can even have, you know, right. And then they have them. And then, like you said, that's what they go back to every time, like the next time they want to try something new. That's cool. That's awesome that you get to facilitate these kind of moments for people.
Yeah, it's really cool, and I hope to keep doing it.
Yeah,
I mean everyone can kind of do that for your friends or for your family, is just maybe like open it up and like give that space for people to, I don't know.
Yeah,
believe in people.
Yeah, it's like really cool. Like,
around, but it, or you can create that moment for yourself. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's hard sometimes to create it for yourself, but like having a friend there, like Laura giving her a hug is like a huge thing, I think, because sometimes you just need to know that someone's there and they feel you, like, you know, and yeah. that's a huge thing. Like that gets people off of that edge. Like, yeah. Yeah. That's rad.
Yeah. So try and be there for people.
Yeah. Big time. You also, like, speaking of cliff jumping, you jump off a lot of big shit on skis. How did you, what made you decide to do that? Like, that's a thing that, like, I don't think people are just like, oh yeah, there's a cliff, I'm going to go jump off of it. Like, that's not a thing that goes through everybody's head. At least I think that's not a thing that goes through everybody's head. How did you start doing that? And what's your mindset like when you do those kind of things?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been a little bit of a daredevil.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, 100% a daredevil since I was a little kid. I grew up on a ranch, and we had horses, and my sister and I would race bareback, as fast as we could. So like going fast. I don't know. So I have that daredevil spirit. And then in high school, I started doing the freestyle competition. So some aerials. We had an aerials hill at our tiny little ski resort. And it was, my cousin Dave, my coach Bruce, and myself, and we would go and we would hit the jumps. I'd hike up and I'd hit them again, like over and over and over. So I got really comfortable in the air. And since we were such a small little place, it was a lot of one-on-one coaching.
Yeah.
So I think I got good at being in the air. I realized I wasn't much of a gymnast. And so for a while I had this dream of being an aerialist. And then realized, no, like you just like skiing and you like being in the mountains. So pursue that.
Yeah.
You don't need to prove anything. Like, just go and do what makes you happy. And so, yeah, the big mountain skiing is what I've definitely transitioned and leaned towards in the last, 5 years? So I had a bit of a slow start with my skiing career with a couple knee surgeries, and then I worked on the Freeride World Tour on camera for a few years after my knees healed, and then finally was like, oh, I could do that. Mm. And I started competing. Then I got really hurt. I did really well in a few competitions in Europe. I placed third and fifth in a few of the qualifier comps, and then I managed to crash a lot, which comes to your mindset question of where your mind should or shouldn't be. And when I was crashing a lot, my mindset was in the extreme, must go the biggest, must go the fastest, must do the gnarliest line in these competitions. And I managed to break my pelvis and at the same time, like, bruised my lungs, injured neck, shoulder, leg, like the whole works was pretty banged up. And my mindset just wasn't in the right place. I was thinking of other things. I was thinking of loved ones who had passed away and thinking like, oh, they'll help me through this. And that's, to a certain degree, like, yes, you should be thinking of those emotional things, but that's not going to make you a better skier. And so as I've healed through that and through the last few years, as I've started jumping off of bigger and bigger cliffs and skiing bigger lines, I think I'm becoming a better skier because of the way I'm approaching it and the way my mindset is, where I'm still sending like love and respect to the things I was thinking about in the past. But I'm analyzing the terrain in a much more intelligent way and much more like strategic.
Yeah.
So like the photo that I sent you a little while ago, it's the A-frame cliff at Alta, yeah, area, and a lot of people have jumped off of it.
Yeah.
Because it's this iconic cliff right off the backside of Alta. And I had been I'd been skiing with my Icelandic skis team, yeah, for the last few years. And one person in particular has really mentored me in like the bigger cliffs, Julian Carr. With like, he's really well known, of course, and but the reason why I listen to him instead of other people who have, you know, jumped off big things is because I really respect the way he approaches it, where it's always this like peaceful experience of connecting with nature and still like adrenaline. Like, I'd love like the thrill of jumping off something big and getting the adrenaline rush, but trying to become as calm as possible at the beginning. And before you even decide to jump off something, really analyzing it. Is it safe? Like, are there any rocks that you could possibly land on? Is the snow deep enough to absorb the impact, like the physics of it? Are you going to defer that, you know, the velocity of landing from such a high distance? How fast do you need to go? Are you going to pop? Are you going to just acid drop off of it? You know, so there's a lot that goes into it to safely do it. And I've really been focusing on that because I've been banged up plenty of times, yeah, and I like skiing too much to just huck my knee and get injured again. Like, I mean, two knee surgeries, that's 2 full years plus a little, plus the pelvis and all that jazz. It's just not fun. Like, I'm sure a lot of people can relate. Like, it sucks to be hurt.
Yeah.
So the strategic mindset of going into a cliff and analyzing, like, is it safe? And that A-frame error was the biggest thing that I had gone off of this year. And I had been telling Julian when we were on this photo shoot, I was like, Julian, I can see myself going off of these bigger errors. Like, what do I need to do? And I'm always asking like advice and what he thinks about. And so he's like, well, let's go hit A-frame. It's like, yeah, okay, sure. Sounds great. It was just the two of us and our photographer, John,
yeah,
Howland. So we were on a film shoot and our filmer unfortunately got hurt. And so instead of just bailing, we decided, like, let's still do it. It was terrible light, like gray day, completely white out. So as you look over the edge, as soon as I looked over the edge, I realized, okay, it's fine. Like, I could go as small or as big as I want. And I'm not going to get hurt. Even if you land sideways, you're not going to get hurt. And so I saw it as a stepping stone. Once I build the confidence to go off something this big, then I can go off the next thing when I need to be a little bit more precise on the landing. So it's all this progression. But yeah, that was really fun dropping into A-frame Julian told me speed is your friend.
Yeah.
So after he went off, I started at the same spot and I started to drop in and started scrubbing my speed and then made myself stop and hike back up and then go a little bit higher. So I was like, no, no, speed is your friend. Like, just go fast. Like, sometimes going slower makes it worse because you don't land in the right spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was really fun to just get the jitters out and like do the biggest cliff drop I've ever done. But it's definitely a progression for anyone that's trying to go bigger. It's like start small and just build your skill and confidence step by step.
Yeah.
But I look at those skiers and think, wow, I can just keep getting better each year. Like yeah. You don't really time out. Some people might, but I don't know.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, that's a great guide to have in that situation is like to have somebody like Julian there is like, that's gotta be rad. Especially because of what you mentioned, like somebody that actually really, really thinks about it, like, and has like a plan in their head, not somebody that's just talking, like it's a different thing.
Yeah. And he says no to a lot of things.
Yeah.
And so that's where I respect that decision-making process.
Yeah.
He's not going to tell me, yeah, it's good to go. Just send it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I've been able to figure out how to do those decisions on my own now.
Sick.
Cool.
The other thing I wanted to talk about was you've been kind of like promoting and pushing this new ski from Icelandic. So we should probably talk a little bit about that. What is it? What is it? What's it about? Who's it geared towards? Yeah,
I had this really, really amazing opportunity to work with several of the other athletes for Icelandic Skis. Okay. And design our own athlete collaboration ski. And so a lot of companies will do the athlete pro model where it's like the one person and they get their name associated with it and have a little insight onto how it's designed. And it was really cool to sit down with Ben and Parr, who started Icelandic Skis. Parr's the artist and Ben has a ton of experience with designing all of the skis that have ever been made for Icelandic. And they said, you all do what you want. Like, don't worry about making a ski that's going to sell well, just make one that you want to ride. And it was all about collaboration. And so four of the guys got to meet and do their ski design. And then three of us ladies came out and we met and did our design and it was all separate. But what's interesting is once we all decided our design on our own, men and women, and we shared that, it ended up being a really similar design.
Yeah.
it was kind of crazy. But the word we kept going back to was synergy, and that we were all, you know, coming together to have the same idea. And I realized how much I don't know about designing skis. Like, of course I don't, but...
Born with that knowledge stock. Like, you don't just come with that.
No, like there's a lot of math and physics and like the, once it was mocked up on the computer, looking at it, like, should we make the tip a little bit wider or narrower? And it changes the radius of the turn and the side cut. And like, I don't know. What do you guys think? Like, it was really hard and it was cool to have to think through the different dimensions of the ski. We ended up going with a reflective rocker profile. And so that's where the rocker from on the base of the ski, where there's reverse camber, early rise, and then a little bit less of a rise in the tail, but still rockered. And then that angle matches the side cut of the ski. And we went with a stiffer flex. And then for the women, we have a 105 underfoot. So you can really use it in almost any condition. Or like, I mean, I'd like to have a wider ski for the deeper powder, which we're going to come out with in the next year. So 2022 winter. I say that now. Hopefully that happens.
Yeah.
But then the men's side has the 117 underfoot. So we'll probably swap the dimensions next year. So the men have the option for a narrower ski, vice versa. But the thing that I really enjoyed the most was designing the art of the ski. And so Parr, who he is an artist, and he has crafted the art on the top sheet of every single ski that Icelandic has ever put out from the very beginning. And he let us sit down with him and share our vision of what we wanted it to look like. and he took notes, and then he went and mocked it up on his computer, painted it. I'm not sure exactly what he did to create the art, but a combination of things, mixed medium is his thing, and shared it with us. And then we got to give our feedback. But my biggest contribution to that, I think, was the art, where when people go and look at the photo or the image of the ski, it's a big fireweed flower. And the tail of the ski is like a burnt tree. And then it transitions up into this big, beautiful fireweed flower that's this fuchsia pink purple color of bloom. And then it transitions into a snowflake at the very top. And it's a fully black ski. And the purpose of that, or the meaning behind it, is a fireweed is the plant that first populates the soil after a forest fire or after destruction of the land. And its intention, or the reason why it grows, is to add that the nutrients back to the soil, stability through its roots. And then as it continues to grow, of course, it's beautiful, and we call it summer's timekeeper. So the blooms start at the bottom, and then throughout the summer season, the blooms start to go to the top as the bottom goes to seed. And then once summer is over, it's all gone to seed. It's this beautiful white fluffiness that goes through snowflakes. But the name of the ski is the Nia, and that's one of the sacred principles in Swahili, that Nia means to bring your community back to its traditional greatness. And so the fireweed comes into that meaning because of it bringing the ecosystem back to its health and restoration. And then us as people, hopefully, will be able to contribute to our overall ecosystem or our communities and add value. So it has this nice, deeper meaning, but it's also really beautiful. And it's a ripping ski.
Yeah. It's a beautiful, I mean, they both look great. The men's and the women's one. The women's one, I actually like the women's one better on, like, not just because you're here, but like, it, I don't know. It looks great. And I am excited to hear that there is going to be a narrower version coming out for men, and that there's a wider version coming out, because I kind of felt like that should happen. But it's cool to hear that, you know, COVID depending, that's going to happen. So,
yeah.
All right. We do have some questions for you. I know you got to get going shortly, so I don't want to keep you too long, but we've got a couple for you.
Cool.
All right. Mercy Anderson had like quite a few. So, all right. Mercy Anderson wants to know, what would you tell young female skiers? I'm not really sure if there's like supposed to be an end to that question or if that's the whole question, but what would you tell young female skiers?
You can do it.
Yeah.
Whatever it is that you want to do, you can do it. Like, first step, believe in yourself, know what you want to do. And then you have to be the one that decides. Like, other people aren't going to do it for you. So, yeah, have the confidence, and step by step, bit by bit, continue to push yourself and do it for the love of skiing.
Renee McCurdy wants to know, tell us about the gnarly women of the Wasatch.
The gnarly women of the Wasatch. The wild women of the Wasatch?
Yes, I'm assuming that's what it means. That's how she asked it, but I'm assuming that's what she means. And I know you mentioned it a little bit in the beginning, but can you talk more about that?
I'll add a quick little thing that, like, when I started making that, there was this push in the outdoor sports media that was a bit of a frustration that there was less female coverage of action sports. And I decided that instead of complaining about it and asking other people to do it, that I would just step up and do it myself and increase the coverage of women in the outdoor sports area. And that was one of the main motivations for doing that. And that I at first thought it was going to be challenging to find these different people to tell the stories about. And it ended up being more difficult to choose out of the many, many, many women who are talking in the mountains. Like, oh, like, how am I supposed to decide you or you? Because there's so many incredible people that are they're just really passionate about spending time in the Wasatch.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Amy, thank you for doing this. Let people know where they can find you on social media. If you have anything you want to plug or promote, feel free. But yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for letting me share some of my stories. And if people would like to know more about what I'm up to and the things that I'm working on, I will funnel it all through my Instagram channel. It's Amy Jane David, AmyJaneDavid. And yeah, thank you to the companies that have supported me and the people that I get to play in the mountains with. And I wish everyone the best, happy and healthy lives throughout this weird time that we're in.
Yeah.
It's all about how you figure out how to adapt to the current situation. It's up to you what it turns out to be for yourself. So yeah, thank you so much.
No, thank you. All right. That was episode number 102 with Amy David. You can follow her on social media at Amy Jane David. For sure do that. She's a great follow on Instagram. She's a great person. She's super exciting and she sends it big. So definitely check out her page and follow along. Next guest is probably either going to be Connery Lundin or we'll be Meme the Whites, depending on how the editing goes on that. And we'll try to get that out within the next week. We're going to try to do these like Monday, Tuesday-ish for the next couple weeks while we're doing these. It's weird right now, obviously, but we're going to put episodes out as consistently as we possibly can, and then we will go from there. But in the meantime, have a good one, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks. Bye.